Hello, podcasters.
Hi.
Casey and Chris here again, introducing week two of Left, Right and Centre, titled Calling the God Phone.
Is that what it's titled?
That's what I've titled it.
Ah, how did you come to that one?
Well, I needed a title and I thought, what did we talk about? Oh, the God Phone. You'll find out about that soon, kind listener.
We didn't really talk about the God Phone that much.
Well, we didn't, but... last week's was called Milk is Madness, and that was just an aside by one of our characters.
That was a substantial part of the show.
It wasn't.
What are you talking about?
It was just as substantial, in fact, less substantial than the God Phone.
No, I don't think it was. The Milk is Madness thing, that was the biggest revelation that someone thought when the milk, the glass is half empty or full, it was full or empty of milk. The God Phone thing is like a 30-second spot.
Well, I've been thinking about that. I think that the glass is in fact full of raspberry cordial.
I thought we decided that thinking about what's in it is irrelevant, and that's what's crazy. Well, yeah.
But so I mean, if I'm going to picture a glass, I'm coming around to Tim's position here.
So you're saying
I'm going to picture a glass,
you want there to be something in it.
I want there to be something in it. It has to be. Wait, it's so half full of something.
It's almost as if it seems to me that Tim's opened a Pandora's box.
Yes, and from which there is no escape.
From which there's no escape. And now that he has put something in the glass, you now can't help but see it with something in it too. Just like if someone described or showed you a photo of John Howard naked, I imagine...
Ah!
You see?
Oh, don't do that to me, Chris.
Pandora. Anyway.
Anyway, this is the second week of the show, not the first week of the show.
This is the second week of Left, Right and Centre. We've been... pushed to the side. We'll talk about week one. This is week two.
Yeah, we're well behind the ball, Chris. But, Tim and Matteo are still not here to record the intro with us.
Well,
Tim's probably awake this time, but eating or something.
I mean, if he's not sleeping, he's eating.
Yeah, and Matteo, he wasn't here because he was seeing a play last week.
Yeah, that's true. Can I just go back to Tim for a minute?
Yeah.
All you ladies out there, I'm quite certain he's told me in the past that if you want to woo him, food is the way.
Mm.
So learn your cooking skills.
Any particular food you should make him?
Anything sort of chocolatey, I guess.
Chocolatey?
Not chocolate specifically, just anything sort of fatty and unhealthy and delicious. Maybe something with a lot of cream.
He always says he's watching his weight, but...
He's not.
No.
Or he's watching his weight expand, that's possible.
Yeah, well, he's watching it, not doing anything about it.
Exactly,
yeah.
No.
Matteo wasn't here last week because he was in a play. So I think this week he's not here because he's boasting about how he was in a play.
Yeah, he's sort of swanning around in the Exeter going, I was in a play.
Yeah, wearing his little French T-shirt thing.
And Madison, the host of...
Illuminati in the background, yeah.
Just
waving at us.
Waving at us. I mean, I would too, like, if I saw us in the studio.
Honestly, the standards in this radio station.
Compared to us, everyone else is really unprofessional.
Yeah. We don't wave at people at the window.
No, because it's clearly distracted us. Now we've lost our track.
We've lost our train
of thought.
We actually
do need to say some things.
This is the show. The website is studentradio.wordpress.com.
And on there you can find all sorts of goodies about the show. You can get a recap of this week and last week. You can access both the podcasts.
Yeah, the podcast which you're now listening to, you'll find a link for on the website.
But also, if you're hearing this one and you somehow missed the first one, you can find a link to that one too.
The other thing that will be up on the website is my full interview with Edwin Kempatrol, director of The Revolution Starts Here.
And
the interview, you'll hear a shorter version of the interview in this week's show. The full one will be up on the website.
As a separate file.
As a separate file, also in the podcast feed as added extras or something.
Yeah, like a bonus.
Yeah, bonus
just
features.
Like this introduction, only this one's included with the podcast and that one's a separate file.
Yeah.
So don't get confused because you could.
Yeah. We've also got the Facebook group.
Left, Right and Centre. Highly active. We've got, 7,000 members.
7 billion members.
7 billion members. Like 17,000 posts a day on the discussion boards.
All of them from Maxine McHugh, I hear.
Oh, yeah. Actually, we're going to have an interview with her in a couple of weeks, so look forward to that.
We're not. Are we? Are you lying?
Dare to dream, Casey.
I wish
dare
we
to
would.
Dream.
I wish we would. We should probably not announce to the listeners that we're doing one before we are, though.
Well, hopefully, everyone listened live, and no one will hear us announcing it on the podcast.
Or by this point, we're about 4 minutes into the intro.
And
they'll get bored.
They've got bored, okay.
Yeah, no one's listening anymore.
I think that's all we've really needed to say, isn't
we? We also need to say the email address, leftrightandcentre@live.com.au. Email us.
You have a much better memory than I do. I just sort of...
Yeah.
Flit about.
I'm sure there's something that I've forgotten, though.
Well, who cares, I guess.
Yeah, who cares? Enjoy the show.
Yes,
Here you go. Bye.
See ya. Yeah, I suppose.
Student radio may contain coarse language and adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
On Radio Adelaide, it's left, right and centre time. It's midnight on Tuesday.
Yeah, good night, guys. Good to sort of be with you again. How good is that theme, can we just say?
Yeah, we're all doing a little bit of a groove inside, I think. I saw Chris dancing in his seat over there.
A little bit of jigging. Tall Casey's good work there. We have a big show for you guys tonight. As always, of course. Tonight's no exception.
I'm Casey. I'm joined in the studio by Tim.
I'm Timothy.
That's right, we actually forgot that last week.
We did not introduce ourselves.
Yeah, I am Matteo.
I'm Chris, and I'd just like to point out, you podcasters won't have heard the awesome theme, so sucked in.
Yes, we do have a podcast now for all of you lazy people that won't stay up until midnight.
Oh, well, lazy. You say lazy, I say wonderful. Thank you to all those wonderful people for downloading the podcast from all corners of the world. Corners of the world. Cheerio to all those people.
Mm. Yeah. Tonight on the show, what have we got? We've got an interview with... it's Fringe Time.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's festival season in Adelaide.
Taking over the time. Yeah. The town, excuse me.
It's also politics time, though, so we're mixing those two with this interview, aren't
we, Casey? Yes, yes. I talked to Edwin Kempatrell, who's the director of a fringe show. It's just wrapped up, but it was a show called The Revolution Starts Here.
Yeah, also he's head of an interesting theatre group.
Yes, Casey, he's also the artistic director of...
Is that here at Radio Adelaide?
The Revolution Starts at Radio Adelaide, perhaps. Perhaps it does.
That's pretty exciting.
Well, what else are we here for?
Revolting, I think.
I think we're also here for some discussion of Peter Costello and his leadership question. Mm. Are we? That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, he wants it, I think we know.
Ah, but will he act on it? That's the question.
Does he want it? I think that's still an open question. We'll get to that later on.
Save it for later. What else do we have, Tim?
We're also going to have a bit of a chat about our protectionism a little bit later on. Again, with a focus on the current global financial crisis.
Oh, the old GFC.
More about that later.
And we also have a new segment coming up.
The
2050 report, guys.
Absolutely. Oh, the 2050 report. Of course we do. With the contributors to the show, Tristan and Yasha.
With the lovely Tristan and the lovely Yasha.
They are very lovely.
All that. And not only that, we have prizes today, guys.
Prizes. Actual prizes. Yeah. Not like joke prizes.
Not joke prizes. Later in the show, you'll be able to call in. We have two tickets to the Adelaide University Oboe tonight, featuring Little Red, John Steelsinger's Cassette Kids, and
Tracer. Children Collide.
Yeah. Oh, everyone's coming.
Lewin's faves.
So we'll give you the cue to call in a little bit later in the show.
Absolutely.
First, what have we got?
All right. Well, just to start off with, we're going to have a bit of a chat about now. I know we're often a bit jocular here on Left, Right, and Centre, but we're going to have a bit of a chat about something very serious that's happened in the last two or three days. It's something, I don't know, it's a bit pretty close to my heart. It's the situation in Northern Ireland. Now, I'm sure everybody knows about, a couple of days ago, there were two British soldiers were shot dead outside of barracks.
And a police delivery boy was wounded.
Yeah, well, two pizza delivery boys and two other soldiers were also wounded. And just I think this morning, our time, or sometime this afternoon.
About 9 hours ago.
Yeah.
Late in the evening in London. I mean, not London, in the UK.
And a policeman was shot in another part of Northern Ireland, and two separate IRAs have claimed that. So we were going to have a bit of a discussion about that.
Shot and killed, Tim, we should point out. He died a few hours ago.
So, yeah. I mean, this is significant because this is really the first... I mean, these are the first fatalities of British soldiers and Northern Ireland policemen, respectively, in more than a decade
since
now.
Since 1998,
97,
I think. 97,
yeah. It's really hard to overemphasize just how big a story this is, just how badly this could escalate, just how catastrophic it could end up being, sort of.
Well, what's some of the response been from critics over in Ireland?
Well, this has been quite interesting, and I think most of the responses have been standard. I think everybody has been saying that these people are behaving in absolutely contrary to the will of all Irish people, of almost all Irish people. I think probably the most interesting quote has been Gerry Adams, leader of Sinn Féin, which is a Republican party, has been closely linked to the provisional IRA, has come out, and his condemnation of the original attacks has been criticised by some as not being far-reaching enough.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he hasn't commented yet on the death of the police officer, I believe, but his comment on the soldier's death, he says it's bad, like, you know, negative for the process. He says it's wrong, but it seems a bit detached.
Yeah.
A bit separated from the process.
Which is I'm afraid Gerry Adams, that's the way, I'm afraid that's the way he rolls. And he hasn't always been the most positive element for the peace process, I'll say that.
And I guess the ultimate question that raises is, is it sufficient? Does it hold up the process? Like, is the main problem that we can, one of the main problems, I suppose, that we can identify is that, you know, Sinn Féin, as one of the major representatives, political representatives of the ideology that the IRA represents, are they hold, like, in the sense that if they're not condemning it enough, does that hold up the process at all? Do we think that makes it more difficult for the situation to be resolved?
Well, I think, you know, I think that does, but I think the worst thing, obviously, is not the response of leaders of political parties, but it's the perpetrators of the acts themselves. What are we going to do now, Casey? We're going to have a track?
Yeah, I think we're going to go to a song. This is a serious issue that we don't...
It's bad, guys.
It's bad. That's the lesson. It's bad.
Might have more following weeks.
This is we're going to take a track from Little Red, one of the bands that are playing at O'Ball. Remember, later on in the show, you will be able to call in. Not right now. Later on in the show, when we tell you, call in, you'll be able to win win two tickets to O'Ball if you're the first. Rapid fire news, guys. You ready?
Don't cut me off this week, yeah?
Okay.
No, cut him off.
No promises. In an International Women's Day commentary, the official Vatican Daily has said that the washing machine has had a greater liberating role for women than the pill. The headline read, "The washing machine and the emancipation of women. Put in the powder, close the lid and relax." The debate is still open. Some say it was the pill, others the liberalisation of abortion, or being able to work outside the home. Others go even further. The washing machine, it added. Have washing machines liberated you, Tim?
I think they have. I'm not sure with this. I know there's one person on our show who doesn't do his own washing. Has the washing machine liberated you, Matteo?
Well, no. If I don't do my own washing, then clearly it hasn't liberated me. But can I just say it's a wonderful way of, you know, continuing to subjugate women and keep them, you know,
Matteo,
in the house.
Surely if you don't do washing, it has liberated you. It's liberated you from having to put in the time commitment of doing washing. It's allowed you to be a lazy slob.
I think that's more his mother.
Yeah, it's more my mother.
So your mother has liberated you through the washing machine. So indirectly, you have. You've been liberated. I think that, I mean, you know, it's quite...
Yeah.
A 65-year-old grocery shop owner from India has attempted to take the Class 10 exams for the 44th time, according to the Times of India. The man, Jabbar, claims that his experience means he can now predict the exam trends, despite having failed to do that just that 43 times previously. Speaking to the media, he said, "Last year I committed some silly mistakes and failed by a few marks, but this time I will not repeat them and pass the exam." So, Tim, you failed a few exams in your time. Would you be optimistic on the 44th attempt?
Well, no. Well, I think it's one of those things about failing exams is you always say, yeah, I'll do better next time. But it's taken me significantly less than 44. Was it exams or 44?
Sat the exam 44 times.
Yeah,
it's the 44th time.
It's taken me significantly less than that to become less optimistic about my chances.
Well, can I just say, guys, we all know the saying, 44th time lucky.
A Netherlands art exhibition will allow people to call a phone number designated for God, but will have to leave a message. Called God's Hotline, callers will hear a voicemail message that says, "This is the voice of God, I'm not able to speak to you at the moment, but please leave a message." The artist, Johan van der Dong, sorry about the pronunciation, Johan, says that he will not listen to the messages, that they will remain strictly between the callers and God. The aim of the exhibition is to provoke thought about the priorities of modern life. Instead of going to church and saying a prayer, you can do it in a phone call. Do you think it succeeds in that aim?
God never has time for us anymore. He's always out, you know, out with his buddies.
You know, I mean...
We always have to leave a message.
I honestly feel that, you know, God has adapted to modern life just as we have, and so he should have had a mobile phone years ago. Like, he's not following the trend. I suppose he's old, you know, it's... Elderly people often have, you know, they take a while to adapt to new technology.
I think that people have to juggle family, work, so many commitments these days that God just has to... He can't be there for everyone all the time.
Well, God has many more commitments than, you know, like his family is 6 billion people, 7 now, I think. Or
can I just say this is bizarre? This is like some artist some European country where they probably don't even believe in God, and we're not talking about God being a phone bank.
In all seriousness, I think this is actually quite an interesting project.
Yeah, this is good art.
Moral of the case, society, Tim?
No.
According to traders and security guards, late-night closures have turned Hindley Street crowds into gladiators in an arena. Last Saturday alone, there were more than 14 violent incidents in what the advertiser termed the entertainment precinct, including bashings, a sexual assault, and an alleged assault, which left a police officer unconscious. 14 assaults in one night seems like a lot. Does this affect how anyone feels about being on Hindley Street late at night?
Not really, because I'm not on Hindley Street late at night.
I'm quite scared by this whole gladiatorial thing. Like, when I think of gladiators, I also think of boxing. When I think of boxing, I think of Mike Tyson. And when I think of Mike Tyson, I think of having my ears bitten off.
Yeah.
And I really don't like, I'm going to be walking down Harney Street at 1 a.m. and then some guy runs up to me and, like, bites my ear off.
Well, I got to say, I'd never had that association before, but now I'm going to be thinking of having my ear bitten off every time I go down Harney Street.
The Russian media have made fun of US Secretary of State Hillary Clinton after she gave Sergey Lavrov, I've gotten all the international names today, her Russian counterpart, a button with an incorrect translation. Clinton had meant to give Lavrov a mock red reset button, symbolising US hopes to repair ties with Russia, but the button read overloaded or overcharged instead. A Russian daily made light of the issue, saying Sergey Lavrov and Hillary Clinton pushed the wrong button. Chris, does this blunder create a serious impasse for US-Russian relations?
I think it does. I mean, I think this is worse than a war breaking out. Frankly, you know, they can't communicate effectively in either of their own languages, and I don't think they're going to ever be able to work together again. Seriously, a new Cold War. That's what's going to happen, guys.
But seriously, folks, I mean...
No. I am being serious, Tim.
Okay.
New Cold War.
Okay, I couldn't tell by the time
you... Buy a bunker.
But seriously, what are people doing giving red buttons with reset on them? Is that how international diplomacy is conducted these days?
Well, yeah, Tim, it is the 21st century, Tim. I just reckon, guys, can we try and think of a list of words less appropriate than, you know, what it eventually turned out to be? It wouldn't be a very long list. It's just really a terrible, terrible gaffe.
Yeah.
Chris agrees. That's rapid fire news for this part of the show. We might have a little bit more later. It's festival season in Adelaide. The Fringe, Boy Mad, Clipsal, other stuff.
It's a good time of the year. It's the best time.
Yeah. I figured we should make the show a bit more topical. A bit more topical. It's very topical as it is. We should make it more festival. So I spoke to the director of a Fringe show. The Revolution Starts Here. Earlier today, I asked him. I asked him about The Revolution Starts Here.
It's an Adelaide Fringe production that we just put on by the company called Act Now Theatre for Social Change. We're on at the Queen's Theatre from the 3rd to the 8th of March, so we just finished Sunday a couple of days ago.
Yep, what was the play about?
The Revolution Starts Here is about six characters who find their way into an alleyway and almost by chance decide to start a revolution. So they all come from different backgrounds and have different reasons for wanting to revolt, and it's this kind of farcical comedy about how they decide to start the revolution, and then eventually it all turns chaotic and goes wrong.
The venue you were in, you mentioned earlier, it was quite a small kind of cosy venue just off Light Square, really.
Yep.
Was that a purposely chosen venue, or was it kind of a factory almost warehouse setting?
It was kind of lucky that we got it. It was the Queen's Theatre, which is the second oldest theatre in Australia, so the oldest theatre in mainland Australia, beaten by Tasmania. But we were originally going to do it in an alleyway, in an actual alleyway, because that's where the play was set. So we were looking around about six different alleyways in Adelaide and spending a lot of time trying to negotiate fees and, you know, security and public liability and all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't until about 5 months before we opened that I was on the phone to Adelaide Fringe, and they said, oh, well, we've got this theatre that we're looking to give out to different artists. So we were lucky in getting it. But it was such a great venue to use it, because in all the venues in Adelaide, it's probably the one that looks the most like a actual alleyway.
You've just wrapped up performing the play last Sunday. How do you think it went, both from your standpoint, from critical standpoint? How do you think it went?
It was good. I mean, it was a huge risk for us to put it on. I mean, any time that you do a play is a risk, but we're doing a new work, which is even more difficult because you're starting from nothing and you have to build it up to something.
Yeah.
So it was great. I mean, we in terms of box, we were very lucky to be getting 60, 70, 80 people per night, which was about 40 or 50% venue capacity, which for the Adelaide Fringe is huge. You know, there's shows that, again,
yeah,
five people. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we were really lucky with the box, and the people that came and really loved it. And, you know, there was lots of young people there that were talking about the different issues in the play and talking about who they related to and stuff like that. And we had one show, we had a school audience in, and so it was great to talk to them afterwards about, you know, who knows what a revolution is and what kind of themes were you seeing in this, and, you know, are there any politicians that you can relate it to? And, you know, yeah, that was a lot of fun. And it was great for the actors to, and for the company too, to do this production because it was very, it was, you know, we produced it, we got young people to write it, young people acting in it, you know, young person directing it. It was all young people involved. So it was a great kind of building block for the company to then go, okay, yeah, we want to do more theatre and we want to do it bigger and better and, you know, faster and stronger and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, and you mentioned, it was a very short lead-in process. You felt like it should have been longer. Did you learn lessons from what you should do next time you try to put on a...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, 'cause, 12 months was great and we did have a lot of time, but in terms of creating a new work, you know, we'd probably want to do 12 months of just, you know, the writer getting together and then, you know, maybe another 6 months of the actors in, you know, once a month kind of thing, and then go into a 2 month kind of, you know, rehearsal season kind of thing. So yeah, normally for a new work, we might be looking at 2 years in the future. But then there are projects that we want to do, which might be, you know, 3 months or might be rapid response or, you know, 3 days kind of, you know, doing some street theatre work or a project with communities, things like that.
Well, yeah, you mentioned a few times the company, the company that put on the play. That's Act Now Theatre for Social Change, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Can you tell us a little bit about Act Now? How did it start?
Yep. It started in March 2007, so we just had our second birthday about 2 weeks ago, where there was a group of 7 or 8, I think it was, activists and artists who got together and wanted to create a performance about David Hicks, who was the Guantanamo Bay held detainee at the time. So we got this group of people together and started rehearsing and created this performance called Project Guantanamo in the 2007 Adelaide Fringe. And then from there, we just continued to create street theatre performances and then moved into, you know, doing more workshops, conferences, putting on this production, The Revolution Starts Here. About 3 months ago, we became incorporated, so we're now managed by a board of young emerging artists and kind of have more formalised structure and are a legal entity. And so we're building our future so that the company can go on, you know, longer than I'm there or that the other artists that are involved now are there.
Yeah, so everything you mentioned seems to have, you know, the theatrical and the political arm. Yeah. Do you see Act Now as primarily a political or a theatrical kind of group?
That's a good question. I think anything that anyone does is always political. So, you know, every performance or theatre performance has political implications. So I guess, and we're all, the people that are involved in the company are by nature political people. We're all interested in, you know, politics and interested in promoting the environment and human rights and all that kind of stuff. So I guess our aim is to create high quality theatre, and in doing so, we put forward a political message. So I mean, it's a mix. I mean, as I said, the company started as a mix of activists and actors. So we do have a kind of split in, you know, we have some projects that might be more for the theatre side and getting young people to push themselves theatrically and to create bold work and stuff like that. And then there's another side where we want to get this message across and we want to, you know, promote the things that we believe in.
Yeah, okay. So just to kind of wrap up, what's next for yourself? What's next for Act Now as well?
We're just looking at a couple of projects. One is a production of Enemy of the People, which was originally written in 1882 by Ibsen, 1882 by Ibsen, and was adapted in the 1950s by Arthur Miller. So we're looking to do Arthur Miller's 1950s adaptation of that, which will be April 2010, hopefully. And then we're also looking at doing a contemporary adaptation of A Midsummer Night's Dream, where we'll be swapping the gender of the cast around so that it's all quite queer. That will be probably 2010 again. Yeah, so they're the two main ones. And then we've got a lot of kind of more community-based workshops and street theatre projects and the kind of smaller things that we'll be working on.
Edwin Kempatrell, director of the play The Revolution Starts Here, which ran last week at the Queen's Theatre, and also artistic director of Act Now Theatre for Social Change. That was the edited version of the interview. The full one was a bit longer, about 12 and a half minutes long. Very interesting. We discussed in detail more of Act Now's
Right, right. Like more of the details and other things. And I think more if you want direction. To hear that, it probably will be on the podcast.
Yes, we'll be podcasting that one. You can, when the blog's up on studentradio.wordpress.com, I'll have a link to the podcast in there.
But can I just say, if you're already listening to the podcast, hello from the past.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Matteo. What have we got next,
time
guys?
Things are weird, yeah. Before we go on, I can also just say that you can email the show at leftrightandcentre@live.com.au or give us feedback via the Facebook group Left, Right and Centre. We always appreciate it.
So, moving on now, guys. Has Costello re-entered the building? A recent news poll, which was in today's or Tuesday's Australian, which was taken in early March, has confirmed, in fact, that Peter Costello is still preferred to Malcolm Turnbull as the Liberal leader by most Australians, or most Australians polled, anyway. The poll, which asked respondents, or the question exactly was, who is the better man to lead the Liberal Party, had Mr. Turnbull at 38% of respondents to Mr. Costello's 45%, and 17% were uncommitted. Perhaps, I don't know, pining for Dr. Nelson still. A similar poll that was taken last July, when Dr. Nelson was still the Liberal leader, remember, had Mr. Costello at 41% and with Mr. Turnbull at 24%, and Dr. Nelson himself at 18%. Now, I think this is a somewhat interesting development in a situation that really hasn't been perpetuated or advanced by Mr. Costello himself.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think you could say that. I think he did do sort of the media rounds later last week. I mean,
he was on Q&A last
week. Yeah, I'm a religious follower of Q&A, and he was on there. He's always impressive on there.
And he didn't reply to anything, but there were a few people on there on the panel sort of saying, oh, you know, Peter Costello should be leader of the opposition, and he was just sort of smiling and saying, oh, you know, I've got no plans, doing what he does.
Lindsay Tanner just accused him of smirking quite a lot.
Yeah. I think he was smirking quite a lot.
He is probably the world champion smirker.
Actually, though,
they have a championship for that?
Career outside of politics, guys.
In a new development, though, his picture in The Australian Today, he wasn't smirking. Matteo rightly pointed out that he was smiling. So maybe...
Oh, it was a grin, maybe. Maniacal.
That's a new step. Yeah. Maybe he's so confident he doesn't smirk anymore. He smiles.
He doesn't... Yeah, he shows teeth now.
So Peter Costello's gone from the one, like, not very attractive habit of smirking to the extremely unattractive habit of grinning maniacally.
No, some people do think it's attractive.
Yeah, speaking of attractive, an exclusive here, student radio overlord Susan thinks that...
Quote, Costello looks good for his age.
And she also knows...
How old is he?
He's in early 50s, I think.
Like, he does look good for his age, really.
Well, Susan did also comment she likes older men generally, and as in fact do student radio underlings Bryce and Lewin.
Moving back on serious topics, of course, as the next election and, of course, the Liberal caucus draws near, the calls for Costello to return to the front bench and perhaps eventually challenge Mr. Turnbull for the leadership will only grow stronger. But, of course, something I've noticed, even though he has made the media rounds, of course, on Q&A, he was on 60 Minutes quite a while ago now, Costello himself has been very evasive, very reticent about it all. He hasn't really... He's remained totally uncommitted.
Okay, well, I would say that's about... I mean, I think one of the criticisms levelled at him during Howard's leadership is that he never really grabbed it with two hands. He never really went for the leadership, challenged for it. I think at the moment he's trying to wait for it to play into his hands. I think every news poll that comes out without Turnbull getting leadership is one step closer for Costello.
You make up a good point there, Tim, and I think I read in the article, one of the things they've said is that he's being sandwiched on both sides, so basically... you know, Rudd's just doing really well, Turnbull this is, and Turnbull can't attack Peter Costello because he's not doing anything, he's not saying anything.
Mm.
So, gradually, the longer this goes on, the better the position for Costello, I think.
He's totally biding his time.
Yeah.
I think there was an... I can't remember in response... I think it was perhaps in response to Malcolm Turnbull asking him if he would be Treasury...
Yeah.
Shadow Treasurer. And he said, there's only one position on the front bench that I want.
Well, and I think there's obviously a lot of rumour about that.
And in any case, guys, it's all very interesting, but I don't know that we've, you know, we'll see how it unfolds over the year,
I suppose.
Follow the story. But as it happens, I'm feeling a bit hungry. You know, I could go for some fast food, Tim.
Very good. Very good, Christopher. The next track is going to be I Make Hamburgers by The Whitlams off their debut album, Introducing The Whitlams.
This is Student Radio at Adelaide Uni on 101.5.
Okay. Recently in the news has been, the global financial crisis. And I think, especially to start off this conversation, Gordon Brown had a chat to the United States Congress. And while he was applauded for many of his speeches... Climate change stuff, lauding the democratic superiority of the United States of America.
Well, I'm pretty sure they are the best country in the world.
They are probably the best country in the world.
What about Iceland? Iceland's pretty good.
Iceland's broke.
Yeah.
They're good. I mean, you know.
They're owned by the Russians now.
Yeah.
Anyway, he had a bit of a mention of protectionism. And we're going to have a bit of a chat about that. Now, basically, what is protectionism, Matteo?
Well, of course, protectionism is the imposition of policies that actually restrict free trade by putting up trade barriers. For example, big ones are tariffs, quotas. You know, you have embargoes. And basically, what it's meant to restrict the flow of free trade, which is generally regarded by mainstream economists to be, you know, beneficial. Free trade.
So it's about protecting my own.
Yeah,
my own assets from external imports by putting taxes on them.
Main thing going in protectionism's favor is that it's good politics because domestic industries and thus domestic jobs are protected.
Yeah, basically, I mean, there's a common perception that people want the jobs to stay. You know, people don't want jobs going to another country. They don't want to lose jobs. Basically, it makes sense politically because it's popular, and the people who lose out are people from other countries, and they don't vote for you.
Okay, yeah. But I think one of the important things we have to remember here, and especially in terms of lessons we can learn from past crises, is that our protectionism, and Matteo mentioned as some sort of general consensus, I would say it's an almost universal consensus amongst reputable economists that protectionism is a very bad policy, and it in the long run it hurts lots and lots of people.
Well, I mean certainly, and Tim, you mentioned, you know, like previous incidents, protectionism actually was part of what exacerbated the problems in following the 1999 stock market crash in the US countries.
No, 1929.
1920.
Yep. No, 1929. No, that was one of a couple of policies instituted by the United States government after the great stock market crash of 29 that extended the Great Depression all the way through to
just before the war, Tim.
Just before the war, really.
But, yeah, but then it said that free traders policies or policies more prone to sort of less protectionism, really got us out of the Great Depression. But of course, we do have to bring this back, I think, to the new U.S. administration. Just briefly, if we can, because of course Gordon Brown delivered a speech to Congress. The thing that has to be reconciled here is that, of course, the new Obama administration finds itself in a very precarious position, really an unprecedented one in almost political history, where it really has to balance domestic interests against really keeping other world economies happy. Because other world economies want world trade, but American citizens want jobs to stay in America. They don't want them outsourced.
And it's worth also pointing out that the US has a long history of, you know, isolationism, basically. And in a hard economic times, that sort of view is likely to have a resurgence. And I think that's something that we have to be very careful about, or certainly the US government has to be careful about.
Do you feel like... I don't know much about the economics of this. Do you feel like, though, from a social standpoint, protectionism, setting tariffs, makes people more kind of xenophobic of other countries? Well, if we want to protect our own things over others?
It's one of those things where it's not just the causal relationship isn't one way or the other. Our protectionist policies can foster xenophobia, and, you know, and conversely, xenophobia tends to bring about protectionist policies.
I mean, I think I'd say that generally, like, the two things almost go in hand. Like, I mean, you know, there's a long history of, like, when economic times are hard, people draw themselves in, you know. Like, I mean, I don't want to bring up Hitler, because if I do, I lose the argument.
Yes,
basically,
that's true.
But part of the thing that helped him get into power was, obviously, he came to power in the lead-up to the war, during the Great Depression, and he played on the fears of the German people.
Yeah, well, basically, the logical conclusion, in case you don't worry about not knowing much about this issue, because from what I've said, stumbling over my words so much, it would seem that I don't either. The logical conclusion to draw is basically by employing protectionist policies, economies are just less exposed to foreign-made goods. And so you're right, that can, in a way, foster xenophobia or just sort of lack of cultural understanding or consumption anyway.
Student Radio at O-Week on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM, as studious as you are.
Let's do this. Spanish police have reportedly arrested a 60-year-old Chilean man at Barcelona Airport after they discovered that his leg was supported by a cast made entirely from cocaine. In total, the man was carrying 4.85 kilograms of cocaine, which was hidden in fake beer cans and hollowed out stools in addition to the cast. For what it's worth, at least the man's injuries were genuine. He's reportedly been transferred to a clinic for an operation on his tibia and his fibula. What the fuck was this going on?
Look, how are the beer cans fake?
So that's the problem have with that story.
Are they not made of aluminium?
Plastic.
I want to know what he held the cast together with. I mean, I don't have extensive knowledge of cocaine and its properties. But
Tim, as I understand it, you can actually just break it down into a liquid, basically, or almost a liquid, like a slush, and then remold it. And so they do that. I don't know. I've seen it on some other thing. There were statues.
On documentaries.
It was like a Law and Order or something. They made it out of statues, and then it was a theatre production.
It's like the world's best / worst plaster of Paris.
Sean Thomas Lester, a 33-year-old West Virginian, has been arrested after using his debit card to buy a soft drink during an attempted robbery. Lester, who walked into a convenience store and told the clerk he had a gun, reportedly became flustered when a customer entered the store. The clerk then told Lester to pay for his soft drink, and Lester handed over his debit card, signed the receipt John Doe, and left the store without any cash. The police, of course, traced the debit card. What the fuck was this guy on?
I think the United States should be very proud that in that wonderful country, they have some of the stupidest criminals on the planet.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I hear they also have a big cocaine problem.
Yeah, no, fair enough. It's really hard to make a smart aleck quip about this. And I was going to call him something that... I mean, of course, we haven't done our content warning. I mean, Casey saw to that. But what a silly, silly individual.
What a silly, silly individual. A survey published on Monday has found that America is a less Christian nation than it was 20 years ago. According to the American Religious Identification Survey from Trinity College in Connecticut, 75% of Americans call themselves Christian. In 1990, the figure was 86%. However, Christianity is not losing out to other religions, but primarily to a rejection of religion altogether. 1 in 5 Americans said they have no religious identity or did not answer the question. So, Mateo, do you find yourself 9% less Christian than 19 years ago?
Well, I wasn't alive 19 years ago. So, I don't know what we're saying. Whether I was 100
much more Christian than you were,
or possibly much less. I really don't know.
You can't be less Christian than when you were dead, because then you weren't Christian at all.
What's the Christian shade of an unborn person?
Probably highly religious.
Let's maybe not get into this too much.
A group of suspected smugglers are about to go on trial for pumping thousands of litres of cheap Russian vodka into the European Union through an underwater pipeline. A spokesman for Estonian prosecutors said, "It might sound weird and unbelievable, but it is a very real criminal case." The accused built a 2-kilometre pipeline through a reservoir that marks the Russian-Estonian border and managed to pump 6,200 litres of spirits across before getting caught. They were caught after Estonian tax officials found 1,159 litres of untaxed alcohol hidden in a truck in the capital of Estonia. The smugglers managed to avoid paying almost $123,000 in taxes. So, guys, have you ever wanted to pipe anything?
I haven't, I must say, but I actually think this is some kind of plot by the Estonians to get back at the Russians, because you might recall the Russians a while ago cut off all oil supply to lots of European countries, and my theory is the Estonians are trying to get the Russians hooked on Estonian vodka and then cut it off, payback.
I don't know much about vodka, but is there, Mateo, a vast difference between Estonian vodka and the vodka of
I am the in-house expert on vodka.
Being the Eastern European.
Indeed, hailing from that part of the world. And I can tell you there is actually a noticeable difference.
I think the reason for the smuggling was because it was vastly cheaper, because there aren't taxes on vodka in Russia.
Yeah.
So
I think they should consider it. There's a lot of money.
Free trade.
Or protectionist policy. That's what we've got.
Yeah.
The ACTU is taking legal action against the Queensland Liberal National Party over its use of a union slogan in its current election campaign. Last Thursday, the Liberal National Party placed a full-page ad in Queensland newspapers featuring the tagline, "Your rights at work, worth knowing the truth." The union movement, which used the slogan, "Your rights at work, worth fighting for," in the lead-up to the last federal election, have reacted angrily to the ads, with ACTU Secretary Def Lawrence labelling it a cheap political trick, saying that it is designed to mislead the public and misrepresents the well-known union campaign to protect workers' rights. Are they justified in pursuing the legal action?
No. I think both parties are entitled to employ their cheap political tricks in this case, and I think the union had their fair shot before the last election, and the Liberal National Party should have a go.
But Tim, that's ridiculous, because the point is not, you know, that they're both employing cheap political tricks. The point is the Liberal National Party are using a slogan that is in the popular imagination as, you know, a policy policy associated with, you know, anti-work choices sort of legislation, more union-based, you know, policy. And I think they're co-opting that and using what people will see as one thing as being another.
Well, I'd ask you this question, though. There is a significant difference in the slogans, and I've got to say I like the LNP one better. I would like to think my rights at work are worth knowing the truth about rather than worth fighting for.
You'd rather know the truth about rights.
Well, I think you need to know the truth before you can fight.
And if you want to win those Oboll tickets we mentioned earlier, the double pass to Oboll this Saturday night / afternoon, featuring Little Red, Tracer, Children Collide, Cassette Kids, John Steel Singers, and a beer, I think. Call us now on 8303 5000. First person will win the prize. Now, the issue of the lower lakes of the River Murray is a major environmental problem. Left, right and centre contributors Tristan and Yasha investigate the issue further in the 2050 report.
The inaugural 2050 report.
Stretching over 3,000 kilometres, the Murray-Darling Basin drains 1/7 of the Australian landmass and is currently a very significant agricultural area in Australia. In a moment, we'll be speaking to our guest, Associate Professor David Payton, about the lower lakes of the Murray River and the Coorong.
Recent studies have shown that rising global temperatures will have a severe impact upon us here in Australia. Hotter temperatures in this part of the world indirectly lead to worsening droughts, meaning that in South Australia, the driest state and the driest continent, our ecosystems are in a particularly vulnerable position.
The CSIRO's most recent climate report shows that along most of our coast, where over 90% of the population lives, rainfall has substantially declined. It reported that this decline in rainfall has severe results for the Murray-Darling River system and adding to on top of the widely publicised hardships suffered by farmers, townships and industry alike.
The focus of tonight's segment is on Lake Alexandrina and Lake Albert, which are the lower lakes of the River Murray. They are relatively shallow but large, covering about 85,000 hectares. The lakes Alexandrina and Albert are comprised of fresh to saline waters from the mouth of the Murray River. The Coorong's fragile ecology depends on getting a mix of fresh water from the Murray and seawater from the ocean.
Dr. David Payton is the head of the School of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Adelaide and has conducted much research into the health of the Murray River and the Coorong. He joins us over the phone now. Dr. Payton, thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, or good evening.
Good afternoon, Mr. Payton. Tonight, we're giving our listeners some background information regarding the lower lakes and the Coorong, but we are as yet to hear some of the environmental issues surrounding them. Can you give us a brief overview of some of the major issues?
I think the first thing we need to do is to appreciate that the lower lakes are one component of a wetland, and the other component is actually the Coorong and the estuary that goes through the Murray mouth. So we really need to look at the system as a whole, so mm-hmm. we shouldn't really be isolating the lakes from the Coorong and vice versa. But they are separate entities in terms of their, let's say, water regimes, and that's really important to understand the management of them. There have perhaps been two drivers to cause the decline of this region, and the primary one has been a lack of flow to this region, and a lack of flow across the Murray Mouth is probably the first one that we've seen. Since about 2002, with a lack of flow through the Murray Mouth actually closed. It closes because marine surges and so forth from the sea drive coarse marine sands and clog up the channels and clog up the mouth. So since about October 2002, the Murray Mouth has been dredged to keep it open, and that provides some ecological functionality to it. But if we looked at what it would have been like prior to humans taking the water out for agriculture and for critical human uses and just general uses for human endeavours, prior to that, something like 99% of the time, including previous droughts, water would have actually been going out through the Murray Mouth. So, in fact, the cause of the Murray Mouth closing and having to dredge it is a direct result of water being taken out for human uses. And it's not a function of the drought.
Okay, David. Should the general population around that area and even in Adelaide be concerned about these type of issues?
Well, they certainly should be, in the sense that it has the potential to destroy one of the global assets in terms of a wetland of international importance. And this is a global asset because birds from other parts of the world come and use this Coorong region for the summertime. These are migratory shorebirds, waders, birds like sandpipers, for which we have international agreements to protect these habitats. So the acidification is likely to cause problems for those birds. But the Coorong and the lakes are permanent wetlands and have been the drought refuges for our waterfowl, the ducks and swans and so forth that live within this region of Australia, the southeastern southern parts of Australia. So when it's dry, these places still provide food for those birds. The food supply already is greatly depressed because of the changes that have taken place.
Yep, so these birds that you mentioned, would they be like migrating from overseas?
They do. The migratory waders actually breed in the Palearctic zone, places like Mongolia.
And, oh, okay.
They breed during our winter time, when that's the summer there, very productive areas. And then as the autumn comes for the northern hemisphere, the birds migrate to the southern hemisphere, and then they spend 3 to 4 months in and around the Coorong region, probably about, for some species, like the sharp-tailed sandpiper, up to 30% of their total global population might use the Coorong in some years.
So you say that we have some international agreements, I suppose, that that we should act on. Is the government actually doing anything about this?
There are a number of agreements here. They're known as Canberra, Jamba, and Canberra with a K in this case, because there are international agreements to protect migratory bird habitats between China, Japan, and Korea. But we also have signed the Ramsar Convention, which identifies wetlands of international importance and aims to, and I think we're the number one signatory on that agreement, it aims to protect those assets, those wetlands that have been nominated on this register. Now, the Coorong and Lower Lakes was nominated and registered back in 1985. And if you looked at the conditions then, we've failed to actually maintain those conditions. So either this wetland should be listed, blacklisted as a place that Australia's failed to manage appropriately for those assets, or alternatively, we need to do action to actually bring them back to where they were at the time of nomination.
Okay, so what would you propose an individual could do about these issues if they wanted to help out?
Look, it's always very hard. These issues are much more complicated than they first appear. Ultimately, we can do a number of what's known as interventions, putting in weirs, pumping out to the South Lagoon, dredging the Murray Mouth. These are all engineering solutions to symptoms caused by the lack of an environmental flow to that region. Ultimately, what Australians need to do is to appreciate they need to live sustainably, and to live sustainably means that they don't allow the capital resources, the natural resources, to deteriorate in condition. We're currently taking far too much water out of the river for human uses and not leaving enough there to maintain the river. So the politics of this is such that it's very, very difficult to see how individuals can. They almost lack power to do these things.
Yeah, but definitely need some government intervention.
It needs some government intervention, but it actually needs wise management and to appreciate that it's not going to be fixed overnight. There's some key issues that are going to society and communities living along the river are going to have to deal with. Clearly, you're going to have to downsize the types of activities, human activities, and also the environmental assets to cope with the likelihood of much lower input of rainfall into this region, hence lower flows in the river. And if climate change is as bad as some people are predicting, then that'll be a substantial change to both the environmental assets and also the actual community use of water as well. And we need to find ways of doing that. We need to find ways of changing the way in which we live in the landscape.
Okay, Dr. Payton, we're running out of time now, so we're going to have to wrap it up. I would just like to say thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you, David. See you later.
Bye.
Tristan and Yosha there speaking to Dr. David Payton, head of the School of Evolutionary Biology at Adelaide University.
And that was the 2050 report.
That was the 2050 report. If you'd like more information about the 2050 report, visit the student radio website, studentradio.wordpress.com. That's also where you'll be able to find the podcast of this show. It is 2 o'clock, 2 minutes to 1 a.m., not 2 o'clock. The show is wrapping up.
I think it's wrapping up.
We're all tired.
Yeah, we're all pretty tired.
We're full of regret, though, to be leaving you for another week.
But never fear, we will be back in a week's time.
Yeah, you just have to tune in then, really.
It's been a good night, guys, I think.
It's always a good night. It's always
he's
fun.
Been Casey over there.
It's always fun with you guys.
Chris is pointing at me. You can't see that, but Chris is pointing at me. I'm Casey.
And I'm Timothy.
I'm pointing at Chris, and I'm Matteo.
And I'm Chris pointing at myself.
Hey, this is Student Adelaide Radio 101.5.
Episode 2 of Left, Right and Centre in the Can.
Right, totally. The first time around, we promised to keep it under 5 minutes, because you might have noticed the intro was a bit long.
So long.
So long. The outro, well, outro attempt one went...
10 minutes and 17 seconds.
Which is a little bit longer than the intro.
So we've decided to re-record it but quickly.
Yeah, it's actually a bit of a shame because the first intro was really outro was really scandalous.
Yeah.
Like the things
not
we
like
said,
the band from Popstars.
No, well, that wouldn't be a good thing, would it? I mean, I guess that's up to you. Like, and I'm sure they're perfectly nice people. Scandalous. Mm.
Yes, they are, I'm sure. I've never met any of them personally, but...
No, but I mean, you know, they look like they'd be agreeable folks on television. I guess the thing that we did say in the outro over the course of 10 minutes was actually the stuff we need to say, which is basically about how you can give us feedback.
Hmm, yeah. Would you like me to...
Yeah, this also happened last time.
Yeah,
I wanted Casey to say things, and he wouldn't.
Yeah, it's pretty late, and I'm
tired.
Do
you want me to say it?
You could say it.
Okay, well...
What's the website?
The website's it's Student Radio, like all one word, no hyphens or colons or anything, so just studentradio.wordpress.com.
Do you need to, like, prefix that with anything?
Well, look, technically you don't. The internet as it works these days,
okay.
You don't need to put anything else in.
Yeah.
It'll just work like that by default. But theoretically, because the most browsers, modern browsers, add the http://www. They add that automatically. You didn't know that?
No, I didn't. I've been typing HTTP.
Well, the HTTP is there automatically.
Not when you click it and you delete what was previously there.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, some people don't think like... You just highlight the main bit and delete that and then you've got it there already. Oh. But I mean, no, by default it puts in HTTP.
I did not.
And www if you don't type that in.
What if it's at, you know, sometimes those websites have like www2.wordpress.com?
Then you'd need to do it.
And I need to do it.
You need to, you wouldn't need to type in HTTP. Anyway, I think we
So that's
also...
the website. It's got the blog about the show. It's got links to the podcast you're listening to now. It's got... links to all the other shows on Student Radio.
Right. We've all got it, which we talked, that was part of the scandal, like the things we said about the other shows.
Yeah, you should listen to them all. We like them all equally.
Equally. I don't dislike Lewin. Okay?
I do like Lewin. He's a good friend of mine.
Just to clear it up.
Chris doesn't dislike Lewin at all.
There are those people who we were going to get to record the outro for us. Their outro would have been better than ours. We also have a Facebook group.
We also have a Facebook group, left, right, and centre.
Yeah, and you also need to be careful not to be confused by last year's left, right, and centre.
Yes, they also have a Facebook group.
They still have a Facebook group.
Ours is much better.
Well, I'd like to point out that ours has about 6.9 billion more members than theirs, and 17,000 more message board comments.
I think they have one message board comment, so 16,999.
Yeah.
What else do we need? Email.
Yeah. So that's
left, right, and center. All one word again. Left, right, and center at live.com.au.
Right. I guess that's pretty much it. It's a shame. Like this outro. You're probably sitting here thinking, oh my god, this is the most. You know, like this is almost orgasmic, which is the combination of the words organ and orgasmic thing you've ever heard of. But actually, the other one that would
as in like pipe organ. You mean?
Yeah, like pipe organ. No, like heart. Like your heart is beating so much from excitement.
That it's asthmic.
Organasmic, but that's like, yeah. This one would have been so organasmic that you'd explode, probably. I'm sorry, the scandalous
one. Are you inventing words again?
No, actually, I saw it, I stole it from an interview. A two-way interview between the actors who play Veronica Mars and Piers in the TV series Veronica Mars.
Television's Veronica Mars.
So that's Kristen Bell and...
Piers.
I think his name's like Chris Lowell or something. I'm not sure. Anyway, it's a good interview. It's very funny because they invent words like organasmic, which, you know...
I'm sure it's very funny, Chris.
It is. I'll link you to it, Casey.
All right. Is that on the internets again?
It's on the internet. It's probably on... on your tube, like, you know.
Well, I have my own tube, do I?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just type in www.yourtube.com.
Okay, cool. I'll try that after the...
Just for you,
once we've done this recording thing.
I think we've done it, really.
We have, yeah.
How long
you
is
should,
it?
You should, it's only about 5 minutes long. You should listen to us midnight on Tuesdays.
Yep.
Listen to Student Radio.
Wednesday,
and Thursday, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m.
You definitely shouldn't nap during the period of 11 till 12 on Tuesdays. Don't nap then.
I think everyone should listen to Break It Down with Lewin and Bryce.
Definitely.
Not only because it's such a good lead-in for our show, also because it's a good show in its own right, sometimes.
Look, again, you're meant to be the good cop. I mean, the bad cop. I mean, the good cop. I'm meant to be the one who...
You really don't like Lewin, do you?
Look, he's never been nice to me. Like, he just hurts my feelings.
How could he make it up to you? Make you brownies?
If he made me brownies, that would go quite a long way. In fact, any of you, if you've offended me at any point.
What we'll do is we'll make a list of people that have offended Chris, and we'll just read it out on the show, maybe. We'll just invite you. If you're willing to patch things up,
yeah.
Make some brownies, send them into the studio.
That would be delicious. And I'm sure Tim would like that. Like, probably he'd fall in love with you, too. Like, even though, because I'd give him one, and he'd be like, whoa.
Yes, he does love brownies.
He loves all food.
Equally.
He's a, I think we should stop now.
I think we should stop. Goodbye.